Good evening, ladies. We're going to jump right in. And the tool that we're talking about this week is choosing to delight in God. Choosing to delight in God. So it's a choice, and it is a tool in our arsenal, and it is something that we need to choose regardless of our circumstances, regardless of what we have going on. But we're going to talk about the enemy of this delighting in God. And it's actually cynicism or being cynical. Okay. And cynical people are skeptical people. I'll give you the definition in just a moment, but they no longer believe the best. Most of them were at one point optimists, you know, believed the best, thought the best. Okay. But having been burned, having had life happen, and having been burned on numerous occasions, they're afraid to trust now, afraid to do that. So they've experienced heartbreak, betrayals, backstabbing, you know, those things that life brings. And then they know this, that people will let you down. They will let you down. Love hurts. People are fickle and they are selfish. You recognize that not everyone succeeds, and despite good intentions and best efforts, okay, cynicism is kind of rampant. It is kind of rampant. It's kind of going on. And I will give you the definition. A cynic is someone who shows a disposition to disbelieve in the sincerity or the goodness of a human's motives or actions. And while this is in itself certainly not a healthy thing toward us, toward our fellow man, eventually what happens when practiced long enough, you begin even to distrust God. And that is where this goes real south, real fast. Not a healthy thing, not a good thing. So while you're all thinking about that, you're saying to yourself, well, I don't really think I'm a cynic. And I would be among you. I would have said that very same thing until I sort of started studying it out a bit. And then I found some things where I've kind of gone to the dark side on in a few areas. And I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. Wow. The best way I know to, we don't like that term, and we would like to think that we're anything but that. We don't want to be the person that disbelieves and distrusts and can't believe the good in anything anymore, is negative about everything, sees the glass not half full, sees the glass half empty, and is rolling out of the bottom half of the glass. So that's what we know is a cynic, and we don't like it, and we don't like to think that we are one, But what I realized is we actually all probably have some of those tendencies. We probably all have some of those tendencies. And just because we would not label ourselves cynical, we wouldn't define ourselves in that way, we still would have some of those characteristics on occasion. Okay. Here are some questions I'm going to throw out there for you. And you just do a little self-check when I toss them out there. Because if you've ever thought these things, if those things have rolled around in your head, well, then guess what? You all got some of those tendencies in you as well. If I don't look out for myself, who will? or nothing is as good as it seems. If it's too good to be true, it's not good. It's not good. If I've learned anything, it's that you should never trust what people tell you. People can't be trusted. Or if I don't keep my guard up, then I will be taken advantage of. If I don't keep my guard up, I will be taken advantage of. Then there's, don't get your hopes up. You're just going to set yourself up for a fall. Don't get your hopes up. Whatever you do, just setting yourself up for a fall. Or this is my personal favorite because this is the one that says, I'm good. I'm fine. It's all good. When inside, it's really anything but good. But what you're really saying when you say that is, I'm good. And what you're really doing is you got walls up. You got the hand in front of your face and you ain't letting anybody any closer than that. That's probably the cynical that we all have some of right there. Oh, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. That. Okay. And then there is, okay, more questions. Do you get annoyed when people are optimistic? Does that annoy you? Because it can. Or maybe you're the optimist that is annoying people. I don't know. But anyway, or when someone is nice to you, do you wonder what that person wants? Because they couldn't possibly be just being nice to you because they must want something. I bet they want something. Okay. Do you constantly feel misunderstood? Like, well, that's not, they took that wrong. I didn't mean for them to take it that way. Or just this week, I found myself saying, that's not what I said. Well, it may have been what I said. It's not what I meant, you know? So anyway, felt a little misunderstood. I did, okay. Cynical is when it's a constant state of that, a constant state of that. Or how about when things start to go good? Things start to go good and you wait for the other shoe to drop. What you're really waiting for is, you know, it's coming. You know, it's coming. So you're just waiting. You won't even sit there and have hope you won't even enjoy the goodness that's going on because you're afraid that the other shoe is about to drop. Wow. That's a biggie, ladies. Do you quickly notice others' flaws? Little judgy, you know, quickly notice others' flaws. Do you worry about being taken advantage of? It references the first question. If I don't look out for me, who's going to look out for me? So, or it references the one where, yeah, she's being nice to me. She must want something. See, we think that. I mean, really, we do think that. Are you guarded when you meet someone new? Do you ever wonder why people cannot get it together? You're just like, seriously, can you just not get it together? Okay. Are you often sarcastic? Are you often sarcastic? Okay. If you answered one or more of these, then yes, you too have cynical tendencies, okay? And we're gonna call them cynical tendencies because I am not a person that ever likes to label somebody like that. I corrected my my cousin and I were raising the same age of kids at the same time, and she was working, so I babysat a lot for, you know, for her kiddos. And then this is the thing, and it's funny, I tried correcting it even back then, not even actually realizing what it was, but she was constantly saying, well, did you have any trouble with him today? He is such a little liar. Oh my gosh. I said, listen, I said, don't, he's little. Don't label him like that, I would say to her. We have the kind of relationship where we could do that, you know, but I'd say, wow, watch your words here. Don't label him that. I said, and she goes, well, he lies. And I said, oh, honey, we all lie. And I said, but we listen, because we do that does not make us a liar. Okay. One is defining the person. It is saying that that's what they are because it's what they do all the time. Okay. Well, I choose to bring that into the realm of cynical, which would indicate that, you know, it's all the time, or you're a cynic. Well, that would mean that you do these things all of the time. Okay. More than likely, you are not cynical, and you are not a cynic by definition. You just are on occasion, and sometimes more than you wish you were, but hopefully it has not become your bedrock. Hopefully it hasn't become the thing where it's the lens that you view all of life with. Because if that is the case, we got some serious changing up to do about that, because that is not a healthy thing to have going on. Not a healthy thing to have going on. We may not choose the situations or the people in our lives, but we can choose how we react to them. That choice, that's in our ballpark. That's in ours. We get to choose how our minds and therefore our lives will go. Because these are choices that we're making to go deeper into this cynicism or stop that maddening train going at a deafening speed ahead. Cynicism is always driven by fear. Always driven by fear. It's fear of the future, or it's anger regarding the past. Either we're afraid of something that might actually never occur, or we are projecting something that has occurred in our past onto all of the people and situations to come, like that. Okay. We buy into the lie that it is too risky to be vulnerable or hope for good things. Too risky. There's a term for that. It is called foreboding joy. Foreboding joy. It means that you won't allow yourself to have joy because you're letting things rob it. You're projecting all of this negativity on to things, and therefore we are not walking in joy. We're afraid that the feeling of joy won't last, okay? Or that there won't be enough, or that we're just gonna be disappointed So we won't even let ourselves experience it. We won't even let ourselves have it. All right. We've learned that giving into joy is setting ourselves up for failure. It's rough, but that's what we've learned that it is. Okay. Setting ourselves up for failure and disappointment. And we might even be inviting in the next disaster by us waiting for the other shoe to drop. So you see, the enemy's strategy is this, okay? It's to flood our thoughts with all that is wrong and broken in this world to the point that we don't even look for the positive anymore. We don't even look for it. Cynicism becomes the way that we think, and we didn't even notice when it happened. COVID has done us no favors in this area, and I am not saying that it wasn't around and that it hasn't been around for way before COVID, but never as much as probably now. Okay, it taught us, it taught us to back off. It taught us to distrust. It's taught us some very, very unhealthy things. And here you go. This is somewhat at the root of this, okay? Cynicism is actually destroying our ability to delight in the world around us and to actually fully engage with the people in it, okay? God has an abundance of joy and delight. Abundance of it, okay? In this right here for us right now, in this world. Don't faint. It doesn't have to wait until you're up in heaven, okay? He means for you to experience and have it right here. But this is us. Talk to the hand. Walls up. We've become guarded, and we have become cynical. Here's an interesting little fact. Researchers have now found an interesting connection between awe and beauty, okay? In other words, when we experience awe, we actually are more favorably in tune with the ones around us. So that those two things go hand in hand. You see, it's when we can be overcome by the majesty of a snowy peak. Christy, I think of you. You know, you get that beautiful view of Crow Peak over there, and there is nothing more beautiful than when that's got snow on that. Seriously, it's just like that fresh, I see the grandeur. I see the beauty in that. I see it. Or how about when we're delighted by a song? You know, you'll hear a worship song that comes and you're just, yeah, I need me some of that. And it just ministers to you. It just really brings you delight. Or how about if you sit quietly in an old church, and I am thinking about ours right now, you sit in that sanctuary and you let the sun stream through those stained glass windows, and you just sit there quietly in that place, and there is something so good about that. There's something so full of goodness in that. It helps us remove the all about me fixation, because because a cynic or cynical tendencies, we're making it pretty much, we're making it about us, okay? So beauty and awe will help remove that, will help remove that. Cynicism says this: I am surrounded by incompetence. I'm surrounded by incompetence. I'm surrounded by fraudsters, people that want to take advantage of you. And I am surrounded by disappointment. Just kind of keeps coming. But you see, those are the things that have created, cynicism creates these walls, all right? And when we can delight in God, okay, this awe, this beauty, this goodness that I'm talking about, when we can delight in God and his goodness, it will tear down those walls of yours and allow hope and trust and worship to flood in, to flood back in. Here, guess how worship springs up? Guess how we have it, okay? It's when we look to the source of all delight, and that's God, okay? It's God himself. And I will tell you something, your temporary problems will sit in the back seat when what you are is engaged in awe of your God, worship of your God. When you can get to that place, then it reduces your problems to their rightful size. It no longer makes them the biggest thing, no longer does it make them the focus of everything. No longer does it make them the focus. Here's a little interesting thing. I go for a walk early in the morning. Love my walks. And I will have my earbuds in and I am listening, you know, and I am listening to amazing, worship. I'm listening to those songs. But when I have discovered something this week, as I have been studying out the cynicism, and as I have been finding that some of those tendencies are even in me, I find that the songs that I'm listening to, okay, they are declaration songs. It's where I have situations that I want to pray over, and it's where I have situations that are, it's all of that going on in my space. So the songs I am listening to are ones that I speak Jesus over that situation. I declare, I this, I that. There is nothing wrong with those kinds of songs, okay? But I am still very much in touch with what is not well in a situation. You know, the object of my prayer, if you will, I'm still very much aware of that when that's the type of stuff that I listen to. So I did a little experiment. I said, okay, none of that today. Today, it's going to be songs that are about his beauty, about his wonder, about his majesty, songs that are about him, songs that are about him, not a means to an end, okay? And I seriously had to go looking. Like, there's not that many out there, okay? I'm just saying, okay? And the ones that were out there, unless I am literally, missing it and just not seeing them, they are all songs that are older. They are all songs that are older. We have definitely passed into a declaring state, you know, and so I had to go looking. I found some, so got them on my playlist. And then those were the things that I was listening to in my earbuds. And that's all that I would listen to is that, okay? So it was literally his awe, his beauty, his splendor, you know, telling him who he is, you know, and worshiping him, getting that awe back of who he is. Wow, who he is. And it was wonderful. It was wonderful, you know, amazing, wonderful. And I finished up with my walk and having, and then I head right back home, cook like as I can. And then I start into the rest of what I would, you know, say is my quiet time, the rest of my time, you know, where I still have all of those concerns, where I have all of those, you know, people that I'm praying for, and what, you know, and it's where I'm reading the word and it's where I'm doing all of that. I came home, only here's the thing, I was lighter, my heart was heavier, God was in his heaven. And you know something, and I was no longer overwhelmed by the gravity of all the things that needed to be prayed for. Because you know what? I knew who was really sitting in control. And I know that it really didn't have a thing to do with me. And I knew that and all of a sudden it wasn't consuming all my thoughts, because he was consuming all my thoughts. And it was awesome. And it was amazing. If you want to know how to slash the cynicism out of your space in any area, if you want to know, it is to get in awe before your God. It is to really worship him, and who he is. And it just reduced life down to all of those things were not big anymore. They were not bigger than God. God was bigger than all of that. So that's the place. That's the place that we want to get to. That's the place. In 2 Corinthians 3, 16 through 18, it reads, this is what happens, okay, when we, like the Israelites, will turn our gaze away from the things of the world, okay, and look to our eternal God, and look to our eternal God. Here's what will happen. Whenever they turn to face God, this is the Israelites we're talking about, as Moses did, then God removes the veil, and there they are face to face. They suddenly recognize that God is a living, personal presence. He's not a piece of chiseled stone. He's not that. And they had trouble with that, you know, because they would erect things. Well, we have trouble with it too, except for we're not erecting statues, but we have made other things bigger than him. We've made other flesh and bone bigger than him. And when God is personally present, a living spirit, it takes over, and all that old constricting law and legislation is recognized as obsolete. Okay, we're free of it, all of us. So there's nothing between us and God, and our faces can shine with the brightness of God, with the brightness of God. You know, I have no idea how I looked when I finished that walk, but this much I can tell you, because I mean, like, I didn't look in a mirror, and so I have no idea how I looked, but I can tell you that there was, it was different. And it was different. I was different. I was different. So whether, I think our faces do reflect that, probably. I think that they do. But whether or not that they do, our insides are changed. Our insides are changed. And so we are transfigured, much like the Messiah, and our lives become gradually brighter and more beautiful as God is there and we become like him. It's what we're here to do. We are, as each day passes, to become more like the image of his son. Not less, more, more. And that is going to mean us spending some time in awe of him and his beauty and everything, okay? So sometimes I have made my walk be my exercise, you know, and that's what it, and that's what I'm there to do. But after that first morning of just worshiping God, just worshiping God, it was amazing the things I saw. It was amazing the things I saw. A deer that I would not have noticed because he was tucked back in just far enough. But I had eyes that saw different. I saw bunnies. I saw a little bunny flit. I saw chipmunks. That's just the wildlife. The beauty of the wildflowers, the beauty of, oh my goodness, oh my goodness, was just reaching out and saying, hello, you're back. You know, when is the last time we've taken a minute and done that? I can promise you this, your day, frankly, your whole life, but your day will go differently. It will go differently because you will be different, having been awed by the amazing God that you claim as your own. It's pretty awesome, okay? Here's a lie. That people are not trustworthy and therefore life will not work out. That's a lie, because here's the truth. God is trustworthy. He is absolutely trustworthy and will in the end work all things together for the good, all right? He will. Here's the verse, it's Romans 8:28. We know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and who have been called according to his purpose. So when you have stepped into that relationship with God, that's you. When we have stepped into that relationship, that's you. So here's the thing. It doesn't matter the tragedy. It doesn't matter how the injustice of a situation that you may be facing or have faced, it doesn't matter how deep the wound, how awful the circumstance that you find yourself faced with, God will work it for your good. He will see to it that he will make good come of it. Does he cause the thing? Heavens, no, he doesn't cause the thing. But things will happen in this life that are sometimes more than we can face or bear. They will happen, but we have a promise to stand on. God will work it. Good will come out of it. Yes, it will, for those of us that know him and love him and serve him. So, just like she does in each of these sections, okay, we have a choice, right? We have a choice. All right. So here's your emotion. Remember I said cynicism, being cynical, starts with a hurt. Starts with a hurt, an emotional hurt of some kind. So your emotion is hurt. It's hurt. And then the thought that comes right into your head after that is people are not trustworthy and life is not going to work out. They're not trustworthy. That I cannot trust them after what happened to me. I cannot trust them after what happened to so and so. Okay. And so it goes. So that's your thought. Okay. Then after the thought, you'll have behaviors. You have a behavior. So here's the behavior that follows that. You will become critical of yourself. You become critical of others. You become really judgy and closed off. Okay. That'll be your behavior. You pull back. This is how cynic happens. Okay. And your relationships are sarcastic. They're sarcastic. You're flippant with your words and in a good way. Okay. And your relationships are cold and on the surface. Nobody getting through. It is a surface relationship, and that's all the better that's going to get. And here is the consequence of it. You become cynical. That's the consequence. Every hurt, every time, if that is how you follow through, that is what will happen. That is what will happen. Okay? Now, let's take the same emotion. You've been hurt by something. Think of anything. I'm sure you can. So right then and there, you've been hurt by something. Trace it back. Find your hurt. And right there is where you make a choice. You make a choice. And your choice is to delight in God. Certainly not to delight. No one is asking you to delight in the injustice of what just happened or the hurt that you've had or any of those kinds of things, but you are being asked to delight in your God. And if that's what you will choose, if you will choose, much like my choice to put in, I had pressing needs I wanted to bring to the Lord, by the way, okay? I mean, important, need to be seen to. I thought. No, I had a far more pressing engagement, and I made a choice right then not to dwell on all that was not great. Instead, I chose to delight in my God. That's what I chose. All right. So here's what happens when that's what you choose, because you always get to make a choice. And whether you realize that that's what you're choosing, you are. You're choosing, okay? Now you just get to decide what you're going to choose. Are you going to choose to believe that people aren't trustworthy and are going to hurt you? Or are you going to choose to delight in your God? Delight in your God. Okay, because here's the thoughts. If what you choose is to delight in God, then the thoughts that start rolling around in your head are, God is trustworthy. He isn't asking you to think people are, by the way. He's asking you to think he is. So now you know what? You know that God is trustworthy. And in the end, no matter what hurt you are facing or feeling or going through, he will work things out for your good. It's a promise. It's in his word. I mean, you should underline that thing. You should memorize that thing. You should have that thing handy, because it's not about what all is going on. It's about, no matter what is going on, he will work it. I don't even know. I've said this to him before. I didn't even know how you're going to work this out, but I know that your word tells me that you will. I know that you will, and I know that some good can come of this horrible, bad thing. And I know it because it's your promise to me, God, and I will stand on that. Okay? So when that's how your thought process goes, you have a behavior. We have behaviors. After our thoughts come behaviors, our actions, the things that we do are behaviors. Okay? You know, pal, about behaviors. Okay? Oh, boy. So the behavior, guess what? It's not critical. It believes the best in others. It believes the best in others all of a sudden. And you want to know why? Because God's back in his rightful place in your space. And you can now believe the best in others. You can. You can. You don't have to look at them with your critical eye and with your wait for the other shoe to drop. You don't have to do that anymore. Guess what? Your relationships will not be stuck up here on the surface anymore. They'll be engaged. You'll actually be engaging with people, actually engaging with them, not just leaving it up here on the surface. You'll be curious. You'll be in awe. You'll be that. You'll be those kinds of things, okay? And your consequence, the opposite of cynicism, is you are able to trust again. And you're able to trust not necessarily that that person will do what is the right thing for you, but because of who God is and who you trust him to be, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. You can actually believe the best. It's all right. You can actually believe the best, because let's say you were to get burned. Guess what? God will work that out. He in you for your good. He will. Everything, all things, all things. Cynicism can grow in this kind of an environment, hidden under this coolness, okay? Pride, finesse, you know, all of those things. Oh, cynicism hides under that, okay? Till we can't even really see the truth. Till we can't even really see the truth. So cynicism is just going to erode our ability to see God right, to see him right. Cynicism is at its root the refusal to believe that God's in control. Because we're pretty much in the driver's seat. Yep, and that's not working out for any of us very well. I'm just saying, okay? That's not working out so good. So at its root, it's a refusal to believe that God is who is in control and that God is good. And that God is good. So you see, what happens is cynicism is interpreting the world and God based on the hurt and the wounds that you've experienced and are still, frankly, lying open. They're gaping open. It makes you look horizontally at people instead of vertically at God. It makes you do that, all right? When you find yourself looking over here at what they're doing, how they've done things, if you're looking horizontal, and man, it is time to get your vertical back in place. That's a good indicator that you best get the vertical going on again, because things have gotten way too horizontal. We've gotten caught in a comparison trap, and we are, yeah, frankly, is what we are. Frankly, cynical. Cynicism usually grows because we think we deserve better than we're getting. Oh, I'm getting around just a tiny bit entitled. And cynicism grows because we think that we should be getting better than we are getting. It says that nobody can be trusted and that we're not safe. In Philippians 4 is where Paul says, rejoice in the Lord always. Rejoice. That's rejoice. Do those things again. He repeats it. Do it again. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Therefore, you do not have to be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. And that peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. We're not going to quit there. We're going to keep going. So finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Think about these things. Okay, that's huge. Right? That's huge. Because he has, in those few verses, just given you literally the recipe for a life that does not have to be marked by cynicism. He has given you the way out. And it starts with delighting and rejoicing in God. And when you are delighting and rejoicing in God, God is bigger. And he says, that's why you don't have to be anxious about anything. You don't have to be, because I've got this. Guess what? I'm in control. I've got this. So just simply make your requests known to me, okay? And be thankful that I've got this. Be thankful. There is, oh my goodness. Are you not just thankful that it's not up to you? Wow. Because you know what? We cannot fix every situation. We cannot fix all that is wrong in this world. We can't even, not gonna happen. Not gonna happen. Okay. So, hello. And then he's saying, whatever is lovely and good and worthy of praise, bring in the awe, bring in the beauty, bring in those things. So, beauty interrupts. Beauty just interrupts us. It undoes us, cuts us open, and it restarts our heart. It restarts our heart. Okay? Beauty is God's evidence of something far more wonderful to come. A world that is beyond what we can imagine, really beyond what we can imagine. And even in the most spectacular of moments here, he is a God that is better than anything that we could hope for. He is a wow, and he is worthy of that. He is so worthy of that. So good things will happen when you train your attention on that which is beautiful, on that which is authentic and compelling and good. And so right now, I'm just actually going to pass this around and pick out any one of those that you just want to have in front of you. And I want you really for a few moments, I want you just to look at it. Man, I want you to examine it. I want you to see things about it. Well, take two, there's plenty, whatever. No, it's fine. It's fine, okay? Since cynicism puts our minds on the things of this earth, we lose hope. We lose hope, all right? And it's beauty that will point our gaze back toward the heavens and remind us of hope. It's beauty that will do that. Cynicism will literally crumble in the presence of beauty. Cynicism will crumble in the presence of beauty. It will. Clyde Kilby has 10 resolutions for mental health, but this is the particular one that I want to focus on and is worth doing. It's actually going to be part of your homework this week, actually, for the next bit. It'll be your homework. Okay, and here it is. This is this resolution, all right? I shall open my eyes and ears once every day. I shall simply stare at a tree, a flower, a cloud, or even a person. I shall not then be concerned to ask what they are, but simply glad that they are. Simply glad that they are. That's a wow. It is good for us. It is good for our mental health to do that. So look at the ridges, look at the lines, look at the color, look at the detail, look at the shape, look at the contours, look at the stem, look at it all. Just take it in, smell it, feel it, touch it, do just literally stare at it. And our world is full of so much. Think about a peacock. Seriously, are you kidding me? Only God can do that. Look at a peacock, for heaven's sakes. Just delightful they are. How about this? I love this. The video of the man that plays his upright piano in his living room while surrounded by 2 feet of standing water that was left in Hurricane Harvey's wake. That's a for real. You know, he just, 2 feet of water, and he just stood there and played his piano. I tell you, that is delighting. Okay, that is delighting. The patterns of a flower petals, 3 for lilies, 5 for buttercups, 21 for chicory, 34 for daisies. That's kind of wow. Not all daisies, but some daisies. I have Gerbera daisies out on my deck, and it made me go look, and it made me start counting them. There were more than 34, and I would have told you that there weren't 34. I would have. Okay. It doesn't happen. God just whipped these out and said, here, I have surrounded you by so much beauty, and you're so involved in the day-to-day of life that you don't see it. You do not see it. You are encumbered. You are burdened. You are cynical. You are all of these things. And that's a shame, because it's not how we're supposed to be doing life. Not really how we're supposed to be doing life. Not at all. Such intention, such craftsmanship, such beauty, such proof of this amazing and wonderful and beautiful God that is ours, that we get to call Father, that we get to have His Holy Spirit living in us. Wow. When's the last time you dwelt on that instead of just feeling like it's all on your shoulders? That's kind of wow, really, kind of a wow. We see the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims His handiwork. Goodness is meant not to merely make us feel good, but to point us to God, Psalm 19:1, that is. Beauty is evidence of something beyond us. It's about a world yet to come. It's evidence of a creator who is loving and profoundly delightful. And beauty floods in and interrupts when, instead of cynicism, we choose to delight. We choose to trust. Wow. Michael Van Elk recently explained, he's a researcher at one of the universities, and he explained how they are using MRIs of the brain to show that feelings of awe shut down selfishness. Let me repeat that. It is documented in an MRI that when you have feelings of awe, it shuts down selfishness. You are less fixated with yourself and everything that's wrong or just whatever, okay? Shuts it down. Hello, give me some of that. The awe, because the awe is for your God. When is the last time you have let Him break into your stuff and you are awed by Him? It will take some digging to find some worship songs that will put you in awe of your creator, but it can be done. YouTube is an amazing thing and it can go back a long way. They're there. And it will bring that about. We could all use with a little less selfishness and a little less cynicism. We could all use that, but we're going to have to choose awe. We're going to have to choose beauty. We're going to have to choose to delight in our God. We're going to, when we worship, we experience awe, or we should be. We shouldn't be thinking about the roast we have in the crock pot or what we're going to grill on the, you know, barbecue when we get home. We all do it, but whoa, hello, that's not what you're supposed to be doing. You can't very well be in awe of God when the brain is out there. Can't do it. It's time to engage. This is years ago. But it was in a worship service, and it was a little child, you know, in church, and afterwards when worship was over. And of course they'd gone downstairs to kids ministry or whatever. But anyway, but afterwards came up, tugged on my shirt and said, can I go back and sit in there in the sanctuary, you know, because most of them are, you know, they're up here running around. Well, actually we like for them to be out here running around or whatever. But anyway, I said, well, what do you want to do in there? I want to see if I can still see Jesus up there. I want to see if I can, because I could see him and I could see him. And I said, oh my goodness, yes, you can go back in there and you can just sit there and see if he's still there. Who can do that, you know? And anyway, well, long story short, we shared that, you know, with everybody in the congregation. And let me tell you, people lingered a little more the next Sunday, because, you know, a little child saw something that adults hadn't been able to see, you know? And yeah, because they look with different eyes and they don't cease to be enthralled with his beauty and his grace and wonder. There's a reason that God says, you enter the kingdom like a little child or you don't enter. Okay. You know why? Because little children are not cynics. Little children, if they get into a big fight and they're hurt, guess what? They pick themselves up, they dust themselves off, and in 10 minutes, they're best friends with the person that just hurt them. And it's the truth, but it's not how we roll, because we've been kicked to the curb just one too many times, and we're just not going to let it happen again. So our walls have come up. We have started to guard our own hearts instead of leading the guardianship to God, which is what we need to be doing. And we've taken over. So we've walled up and we've become cynical and we've become disappointed and disillusioned with everything, really. Because it might start out in just a few areas. And like I said, you know, it doesn't necessarily characterize everything that we're doing, but keep it up and it will, because it's going the wrong way. So it may have started out, you know, just in this one area and just in this one hurt, just in this one thing, okay? But then you see, the more times you keep choosing to send up the walls, the more cynical you get, until guess what? You are becoming a cynic and you can't see it anymore. And I'm here to say to you tonight, ladies, gotta let God bless through. You've got to get some beauty. You've got to get some awe back of your creator. You got to remember who he is. And you got to remember that he is bigger than anything you have facing you, bigger than anything you will have facing you. You don't have to worry about what's going to face you. Because if you know him and you call him your own, guess what? He's got you. And he will walk you through whatever it is. Do you have to be worried about what's going to happen? No, you actually don't. Because you have his word in Romans 8:28 that he is going to work even the bad stuff for your good. He will work it for your good. He will. Because he's God. Cynicism and worship, true worship and awe of God, cannot coexist. So you need a little cynicism out. You need a little worship. You need your awe factor returned, because I just dare say in the dailies, it's not there. Not for most of us, unless we make an intentional effort to do that, to do that. He gave us the antidote in Philippians 4. And the reason that I read all the verses is because we've gotten so good at this in our world. You know, the part that we know, here's the part that we know: do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, present your request to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. By the way, will guard your hearts. You don't have to, he will do it. Okay. But anyway, but that's the bit we know. You know why? Because we live in a world where we are anxious. We are fearful. We are overcome with things that we can't fix. So we fret. We're depressed. And the list goes on and on. So does this speak to it? Yeah, that speaks to it, because that's what we want to hear. But I want to tell you where it started. It started a few verses before that, when he said, rejoice. 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 Delight in me. Okay. And then, because you are doing that, you don't have to worry, because he is in control. So you really don't have to worry. You don't have to fixate. You don't have to worry. You don't have to let that be rolling around in your head. But he doesn't end it there. Oh my goodness. He goes on to say, so rather than letting what concerns you in your petitions and in your supplications, he moves on to say, what? So whatever is good, whatever is right, whatever is lovely, whatever is excellent, whatever is worthy of praise, think on these things. So there you have it. That chapter gives you pretty much a blueprint and a go-to, but you need it all, because it starts with rejoicing and delighting in your God. Does he want you bringing those things to him? Yes, he says that he does. But he says, you don't have to be anxious anymore, because you're leaving them at my feet. And instead of letting your thoughts go right back to the worrisome stuff that was troubling you, he now says, think on these things. Dwell on these things. So there you have it. It's an incredibly powerful bit of scripture. And as I said, a blueprint, really, if you will, a blueprint for how you're gonna get it. Okay. See, we have to quit saying, I'm fine. Hands up. Me, I'm fine. Okay, gotta quit it. All right. We have got to let God break through. We've got to let God break through. We do. We really do. And that will change everything. See, Jesus came for us. Okay? He came for us. Even though we had our arms crossed and said, no, I don't need you in that room. I don't need you here. Oh yeah, good, okay. You can be over here, but not here, all right? Arms crossed, defiant, mean, all of those things that we were, and he came for us right then. He came for us right there, okay? Cranky, unsure, doubting, cynical, negative us. He came for us, okay? So here's the thing. Choose it. Choose. We have a choice. And the reason that is true is because Jesus first chose us. He chose. He first chose us. So now we get to choose. He busted down the door. He rescued us. His beauty, in his kindness, he suited up and came for us. He did. That's what he did. And we have been promised a forever better than we can even imagine. Better than we can even imagine. That's kind of a wow. That's kind of a wow. I was asked many, many years ago, but I was asked to actually give my testimony, how I came to Jesus, because I actually, and I had to think about that. They said, well, you have a few days to think about it, before you have to do it. So I very prayerfully went to God and I said, wow, I don't know. I've never had to think about putting that into words before. So God, you got to help me, you got to help me with that. And so I thought and I contemplated, because I grew up in the church. I grew up in the Catholic Church, actually. And so I'd always known there was a God. I'd always known that there was. And I went to church every day. We may not have been your typical Catholics, but let me tell you, we were a Catholic family, very big Catholic family. We just didn't do church on Sundays. It was on Wednesdays. It was on pretty much every day, every day that you could be there, we were like there. But even beyond that, I went to Catholic school. It wasn't just it was what I knew. It was what I knew. So there wasn't really a time that I did not know about God. I did know about him. Okay. But until I was 16 years old and in a situation, I found myself in a situation that was frightening and scary and not one that I could deliver myself from, not one that I could do anything about. And I had been left on a dark, well, it wasn't dark yet, but it got that way. But I had been left on this gravel road up in the hills. The so-called friends I was with left me there. And I just thought they would just come for me. And so I just kind of thought it was a big joke, when they drove off. And not so much a joke. And so all of that to say, the only thing I knew was I just knew the prayers that I'd memorized as a Catholic. Okay. That's all I knew. So I was saying those, walking down, well, that wasn't really changing up anything. So the next thing that happened is I said, spoke it out loud and said, God, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can talk to you like this. Okay. But I'm in trouble here. I stood up for and did the right thing back there, and it cost me my ride back into town. And if I wouldn't cave and give in, it cost me that. So now I find myself, I do not know where, and I need you to get me safely home. And it was getting darker. 16-year-old girl didn't have any business out in the boonies like that. And I said that to God. And then I went back to doing the only thing I knew how to do was, pray the prayers that I'd memorized. So it was about 5 minutes after that, I came to the highway, which, I knew the direction to head, but it's now dark. And I knew the direction to head back to Rapid City. However, I was afraid. I was afraid. I was off to the side of the road, where you, of course, have to be. I was afraid if cars went by me, but I was afraid if they started to slow down. But one did start to slow down. And I just kind of had to suck it up. And I could hear from the car, I could hear my best friend's older sister holler at me and say, "Cindy, what are you doing out here?" And I said, "Oh, my goodness. Oh, yay." So anyway, that's whose car I got back in. You got to love this, because this is God for you. My best friend lives two houses from me. I mean, we are literal, you know, that's how close we were. So anyway, so she takes me home. Also a very good Catholic family. She takes me home and I said, "Betty Jo, I said, God sent you to me." She goes, "No, we were out for a drive. God didn't do any sending." And I said, oh no, he did. He sent me to you. And she said, "No, he did not." And about that time, her fiance, which was actually the one driving, said, "Well, I don't know about that. Really, really, Betty, maybe he did, because I mean, you know, it's not like we planned to be out here." He said, "If we wouldn't have got into that heated discussion with your family," he said, "I don't think we would have been out here." And she said, "He doesn't do things like that." And I said, "Oh yeah, he did. Because," I said, "I'll tell you something else." I said, "You can actually talk to him. You can like pray to him. Like, I mean, talk to him. Like I'm talking to you right now. I just talked to him." And she goes, "Well, what do you, of course you can talk to him. You know, you can talk to him when you say your prayers." And I said, "I mean, talk to him, like in a conversation." I told him that I needed him to get me home safely. And 10 minutes later, show up and you are taking me literally right to my house. So here's how it went with me. God gave me this picture. How does one save someone? How does one reach in and give them a relationship with him? How does he do that? He reaches right straight down out of heaven. And this is the picture, because only he could like do that. You know, things, you know, like my destiny was pretty well written for me. I that is what I would have always been, because it's what I knew. And really, apart from him reaching down right straight out of heaven and plucking me out of the middle of that and setting me on his path, that's him. That's God. That's what he does. That's what he does. And he can do it. These are the verses that that God gave me. Isaiah 59:1. "Behold, the Lord's hand is not too short that it cannot save, nor his ear so dull that he cannot hear. Listen, the Lord's arm is not too weak to save you, nor his ear too deaf to hear you call to him." And Psalm 77:15, "With your mighty arm, you redeemed your people." And Isaiah 40:10, "The sovereign Lord comes with power and he rules with his mighty arm." That is the amazing God. That we need the awe. We need the wow. And it just brought all of that back. Those are things God can do. Those are things. You are never so lost that he cannot reach right down into the middle of your stuff and change it all. And I found myself the other morning really crying tears of repentance and forgiveness for having lost some of the awe and some of the beauty and some of that. And I said, "Oh God, forgive me," because we should never lose that. And it is how we become so cynical if we don't. It is how we become so cynical if we don't. Cynicism will melt under the relentless hope of the gospel. It will melt. Bitterness cannot linger under the relentless assault of love that he has for us. And hope cannot die if you let his empty tomb empower it. Wow. Okay. So we delight in him. We delight in him. In Psalm 37:4, it says, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires and secret petitions of your heart. When you surrender to Christ, he will lead and transform every aspect of your heart. Let Christ give you the desires of his heart, and let your heart reflect his way. Let your heart reflect his pattern. That's the Amplified Version. Psalm 37:4 in the Amplified Version. It's a wow, and it's a choice, and it's the thing that we have to go out and practice. It's the thing that we have to go out and practice. Interesting, funny thing. You're all sitting there with a beautiful flower, a rose, or whatever. I want to hold this up. This is a grapevine. Okay, and it comes from my backyard, and I clipped it because I love the passage of scripture in John 15. I am the vine, and you are the branches. Okay, and this is a branch. Okay, this is a branch off of there. But I learned some things. Okay, you see. Your flowers all still look really, really good, okay? And they won't for much longer because, you know, they're separated from their plant, okay? But he tells us in John 15, I am the vine, you are the branches, okay? Apart from me, you can do nothing. Do you see how very wilted this is? It's the last thing I did before I came, and I stuck it in water immediately, and I could not even then preserve it. Okay. It wilted the fastest, and I thought if I stick it in water, it'll last until I can, you know, do the illustration. But that is pretty life and limp. That is lifeless and limp. And that's how we are when we are not collected to the vine, and he is the vine. And when we're out there trying to fix things, do things, trying to survive life, when we're out there trying to do that, this is it. This is what you're doing apart from him. You're not getting much done. You're not getting much done, okay? And that is what happens when we're trying to do life. We're weak. We can't do it. We won't bear up under it. We have to be connected to the life source. We have to get our awe back. We have to get our awe, our beauty. We have to get it back. We've got to put him back in his rightful place. And then we have to spend some time there every day, not just once a week, not just when we feel like it, we've got to spend some time there. It's how you'll go at any little cynical roots that have taken root in you. It's how you'll go with them. You return your beauty, your delight, and your awe in your God, and you will be well connected. You will be well connected. Another little interesting fact. I found this interesting. This was a gorgeous vine, you know, earlier. But anyway, but the grapes, actually, the grapes are never out here. They're not out here. I have all of these big, gorgeous, you know, vines on my trellis out back, and they're big and they're gorgeous. But I wanted, you know, a clump of grapes. I wanted a clump of grapes. And so I had to go digging and I had to go looking. Do you know where the grapes are? The grapes are right before you have the vine, and they are right at the base of, so it's God that produces the fruit. It is God that produces the food. You know, you can't muster up more patience. You can't muster up more gentleness or goodness or self-control, but they are a result of being rightly connected to the vine, which is Jesus. And then he bears much fruit in you. It was a big wow for me, actually. A big wow. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for this evening, Lord. And this evening, really, we come with repentant hearts, asking for forgiveness, Lord, for having lost the awe in you, for not spending as much time in that awe and wonder and worship and beauty, God, of you. So please, God, forgive us of that. And Father, I ask that you would be with each one of us, Lord, in these next few weeks, Lord, that you would cultivate the beauty, your goodness, the awe, that worship, Lord, and start to slash any roots of cynicism, any roots of depression, any roots of any of the things that trouble us, God, that they will melt away. It says, melt away, cannot stand in your presence. That awe, that beauty, that wonder of you. God, give us that back in you. In your very precious and holy name, we ask that.